This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, before you purchase anything at the Amazon Store, and your purchase will help support our show. This episode is also brought to you by Bluehost, my favorite hosting provider for your blog and website. It's very affordable, but much more important. It's almost like magic if you want to install a WordPress blog. Normally, that takes a lot of time. With Bluehost, it's just a matter of clicking one button and all the rest, like magic, is put into place by Bluehost. Check it out at sqpn.com/Bluehost.
I think we've wasted our last day being haunted by the past.
Now we can focus on being haunted by our impending lack of a future.
Selena isn't going to win, not with all of us united against her.
Hope isn't easy when I know she holds my heart.
Which you'll get back stronger than ever. That's what it means to be the most resilient.
That can be another one of her tricks, too.
Regina, I've seen what life has thrown at you. And you still fight against the darkness every single day. Sooner or later, your heart will find its way to happiness.
That doesn't feel possible.
But it is.
I know you, and you feel things deeply. With or without it, you feel things with your whole soul.
Don't let anything hold you back.
Hello and welcome back to the Secrets of Once Upon a Time, the show dedicated to the ABC hit series. Well, Once Upon a Time. What other show could we talk about here? And today, this is episode number 64 of our podcast, and we're going to talk about the third season, episode, gosh, was it 18, I think? Bleeding Through. And joining me today, Inge, Lisa, and Shelley. Good afternoon or good morning. I never know exactly what time it is on the other side of the planet. I'm in Holland, by the way. I'm Father Roderick.
It's afternoon here in Texas, Father.
Afternoon in Texas. And what's the time in Groningen? Oh, never mind. That's the same country. 7:20 p.m.
It's very distant sometimes.
It feels like the North Pole for me. I'm in the South. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. We're going to talk about a very interesting episode. I think our opinions might be a little bit divergent as to the valuation of the show, but we can't really say that this is just filler. There were a lot of interesting things happening and also a lot of questions, at least on my side. But before we venture into those questions, let me first ask Shelley, what did you think of this episode in general?
You know, my impression of this episode increased in its value the more I thought about it after the end. There were parts of it I was disappointed with, but after I had a quick conversation with Inga on Facebook, and I was making my notes last night and reading them over a little bit this morning, and I'm going to give it an 8.
Ooh, that's pretty good. Well, Inga, on the other side of the planet, perhaps also the other side of the spectrum, how would you rate this episode?
I think 6.5 or 6.8 out of 10.
That sounds like a green apple to me. It's for the for the writers.
It wasn't the best episode I've ever seen, but it wasn't really bad either. It's kind of, like Lisa, I was a bit disappointed in some parts, but we'll get to that later.
Okay, Lisa, tell me what you thought of the show.
I'm going to split the difference and say I'm like a 7. There were some really great parts. I was a little disappointed with one of the reveals. But overall, they do what they do best, and that's moving the story forward with good character development. So.
I would rate this one a 7.5 out of 10, not because it was a very, you know, like just an incredible episode or anything, but because this episode did what I love about this show, and that is to just have me wonder about a lot of things that I'm seeing. I was like, wait a minute, What am I looking at? And I like a show that keeps me thinking after I've watched it. And I just came back from a run. I'm training for a marathon. And while I was running, I was listening to the various other fellow podcasts about this particular episode. There are lots of great Once Upon a Time podcasts out there. And it's just funny to hear their first impressions. And then that just made me think back. It's like, wait a minute. Oh, I missed that. Interesting. And that's what I love most. When an episode doesn't really explain everything, but just kind of, I don't know, just keeps me thinking. And there were some very interesting visual moments. And of course, the most striking one was the Twilight Zone poltergeist thing in the attic, which really creeped me out. And I liked it was something new. We had never seen something like that before. So,
the race.
I liked it. But let's just go through the main events in this episode. We won't rehash everything, but I loved, I don't know what about you, but I loved the first scene with the apples. I thought it was a very, very good dialogue, and it was just, mm-hmm. you know, it's like all this double entendre between those two sisters and the green-red opposition. I mean, it's just, they're really emphasizing how different these two girls are, even though they are half sisters, and which makes me, of course, having seen now, you know, 2.5 seasons of this show, makes me believe that, okay, yes, they are emphasizing the fact that these two girls couldn't be more different, and that's why they're gonna ultimately end up together, and there's going to be some kind of fusion, or, you know, this is not going to end in an opposition. I think there's going to be some reconciliation, but that has to do with my theory about what will ultimately happen to Zelina. But we might talk about that later on. What did you think of the whole apple thing?
I loved it. I thought it was really clever because we've seen Regina with those red apples, and then Zelina comes in, and what she say, the red ones are bitter or too sweet, mm-hmm. or so, you know. And I loved it. I thought it was a great way to, you know, have some conversation with them and point out the differences.
I agree. I'm really enjoying the play with the colors. I've been noticing a lot more of the colors in the set design this mm-hmm. season, and that harkens me back to the very first season. I think we kind of got away from it with the Neverland bit. But Regina, again, she's in that beautiful blue, which is really pretty on her. And it's her color of redemption. It's her good color, not her evil color. And when they said the red are so sickly sweet, people tend to like something a little sharper. Mm-hmm. You know, the back and forth is very classic sister jabby.
And the blue was very iconic for the behavior of Regina, because, my goodness, she was definitely kind of cashing in all the investment that she put into the transformation of her character. And this episode made me truly believe that she has changed for good. There's still, I mean, she's still sharp, but it's not that she's become totally sickly sweet and everything, like that's what kind of Zelina tells her, but she's really turned good, keeping all her character traits, and I thought that was magnificent. If you think where we come from in the first season, this terrible, you know, queen of evil, where you think there is no way in the world that I'm ever going to like this person, and look where we are now.
They've gone a long way with redeeming Regina. And that's why I gave this episode an 8, is really the character development.
Yes.
And that every character stayed true to their character. Mm-hmm. Nobody acted out of character in this episode.
No.
You had Regina, she made a good confession to Belle, and she tried to make amends.
Mm-hmm.
And she did things she made good choices.
Yes.
She made truly good, selfless choices.
Exactly.
She wasn't out for herself. She was demonstrating love, that love is in her heart for the first time. I mean, really, truly. And that's changed her, that allowing Emma, allowing Henry, allowing all of this that's happened, that she no longer sees love as that weakness.
No.
She is now embracing it. And by the end of the episode, she is taking that second chance. She's taking that risk.
Yes. And I truly,
she's living her life.
I think that Henry has played a very pivotal role in this, because she says, actually, in a situation in which she has been before, where normally she would lash out and she would punish whoever messed up, and then she has this incredible phrase where it's like, you know, there's nothing more important than a child, or something along those lines. And there's nothing worse than losing your child, or something like that. Just really, that's a new experience that has truly changed her life. The fact that she realized that she loved Henry and she couldn't live without him. And that's what opens her up to the love of Robin Hood as well.
Yeah, I think it makes her real well-rounded as a character. She's the younger sister, but
yes.
she's much more mature
than
Zelina. And I loved it when Robin Hood confessed, well, I had to give up your heart because Rumpel was threatening my child. So yes. I chose for my child instead. And then I would totally expect the old Regina, like you said, to explode.
Yeah.
But she says, well, there's nothing is worth losing a child over.
Right.
And I was like, wow. That was one of her best lines, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And
nothing is worth the life of a child.
And,
you know, Father, mm-hmm. there is one thing. You keep saying the older sister and the younger sister, but both of them were raised from childhood to adulthood not knowing the other existed. So really what you have is you have two only children.
True.
Who are now finding out they're sisters. And
yes.
that's a whole different dynamic, I think, than growing up being the older sister or being the younger sister.
Oh,
maybe
certainly.
Lisa would agree with me on this.
Certainly.
Yes, which one are you? If I'm, who's who?
Who is red? Who is green?
Who's older here, so. Wait a minute. You're the older sister. You're Zelina and I'm Regina. What is that?
No, because we grew up with one another.
True. We'll have to wait for the end of the season to see if that's really a problem to be Zelina or not. What I liked about this first Apple dialogue is also that it created a story arc in this episode, almost like a biblical inclusion, you know, where sometimes if you have a segment of the gospel, especially Matthew, the evangelist, you does that a lot by repeating words in the first sentence, and then he repeats the same word at the final sentence, and then he has a second word that comes back in the phrase before the last phrase, and he creates like almost a circular structure of the narrative, and in this episode you had that with what Zelina tells Regina, and that is, you know, you're missing your life. You're not daring. You're not. How is it? It's almost as if you've become complacent and you don't take advantage
of. Don't take risks.
You don't take risks, and of course she tries to I don't know, lure her into the dark side or something. It's hard to tell what she truly wants to say by that observation. But the end of the episode is exactly Regina. Stepping out of her comfort zone, overcoming her fear of committing, and, you know, sealing her love with for Robin Hood with a kiss, which was totally exactly that. It was what Zelina told her to do. It's just, you know, just dare to take what's in front of you and don't wait and don't hold back. And but it was in a totally different way than Zelina probably imagined.
Or maybe not.
Well, I don't
because
know.
In the novel Wicked,
yes,
the Zelina of the Wicked Witch of the West goes steals the boyfriend of the good witch.
Could this be all part of a plan where she's trying to hook up Robin Hood and then seducing Robin Hood afterwards?
Yeah, she even threatened Robin Hood in this episode. I will take Robin Hood from you as well.
Oh,
I will
wow.
destroy you, and by taking. That's very the thing you love most from you.
But I cannot really see how Robin Hood could fall for Zelina if she is behind the Dark One, basically threatening to kill his son.
I mean, Zelina wants to take Regina's place. She wants everything that Regina has. She envies, and when Regina calls her on that in this discussion, you know, you want your superpower to be envy, just go right ahead.
Yes.
And she stands up and she's like, no, envy is just another word for ambition.
Mm-hmm.
I work. I strive for things. I work. You run away. You cast a curse. That's just running away. You don't take risks. You don't live your life. You're such a waste. Mm-hmm. You know, I have ambition. I'm going to do it for me. And I wrote just like Cora.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because she is exactly like Cora in a way that Regina is not and never was. Not mm-hmm. really.
Well, and then I was like, oh, it's easy for Zelina to say that about her sister because she hasn't watched the first two seasons of Once Upon a Time. But my goodness, Regina has had some ambition and she was relentless
right.
and she was just, you know, literally killing over in order to reach her goal. So, yeah, she just has matured and she's past that now. And it feels like Zelina is just at the beginning of this road and she still has to discover all this. She might have that heart, brain, and courage, but she sure doesn't know what it means. So perhaps there is something in the making there, story-wise.
I have to see how many seasons we get. further so that see if Zelina has time to
I think they're going to wrap up this storyline by the end of the season. I don't think
I do too.
Yeah, I don't. Well, anyway, that's for later. I have a theory about what will happen. then we go to a flashback. Very interesting one because, well, once again, we see the young Cora. We've seen her before. It was a while ago. Was that in second season that we saw this actress playing Cora, the young Cora?
Yes, we saw her in The Miller's Daughter.
Right.
Which is about this time last year.
And then she's working as a barmaid, basically, and clearly she has to make money to, I don't know, sustain her family, or, well, she doesn't have a family, but she's definitely poor. It's not the most enviable job because people are treating her basically as trash. Then all of a sudden there's this Prince Jonathan who is... seducing her with a straw ring, and of course saying, "Well, later on when I come back, I will turn it into gold." And it's this kind of very awkward situation where, well, the moment that he gives her that ring, then Cora is like, okay, well, I guess we're married now, so well, let's spend the night together. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, it was a he didn't have to seduce her. He didn't have to try too hard. And what it revealed to me about Cora's character was this. You know, she's working. Mm-hmm. She's doing this on the side in addition to working at the mill. Mm-hmm. And he says, "You work in a tavern, but you move like a lady." Mm-hmm. And she's saying, "I read somewhere, I heard somewhere that you have to act the part you want to be." So she's already aspiring to wanting more than what life has given to her.
Yes.
And when he casually dropped that handkerchief, I was like, oh, no. And this was my biggest disappointment.
Oh, really?
Because I really, really wanted Zelina to be Rumple's child. And
yeah, I did too.
That would have made the second
to get pregnant so that she could trap him into the it was classic, and it was just so disappointing for it. That was the one. It was true to her character, but it was disappointing to me.
But imagine if she truly was her child, and then the later scene, the kissing scene on, that would have been really more awkward than Empire Strikes Back.
which scene?
Them in the kitchen.
The
Rumple
kissing.
And Zelina.
Rumple seducing Zelina to get the dagger.
They had to show this so that Rumple could do that move in the kitchen. And that's true to his character. He will use any and every thing he has, every resource he has. But they couldn't have done it earlier because we were all speculating that Rumple was going to be her father. So the minute they gave it away, then they could do the scene. It was like, oh, man, that just burns.
I was disappointed, too, because I thought that would be a really nice twist. And maybe they didn't do it because we all kind of expected it. I mean, maybe that's why they didn't do it, because it seems so, oh, really, just happens to be. But we'd already had it established that Rumple and Cora had an attachment. So, you know, I kind of thought that was...
Yeah, right. It's back in Miller's Daughter, when you know, he wants her firstborn and he amends the contract to say that Cora owes him his child instead of her firstborn. And we go back now and look at that and we say, mm-hmm. oh, so he must have known about Zelina or figured something out, or for whatever reason he couldn't say Cora. Maybe he saw a vision although when he met Zelina, it didn't appear that way. Some reason now you look back and go, what if he amended the contract so that Cora owes him his child? So it didn't matter which one of her children passed mm-hmm. the curse, mm-hmm. but he would get Bay. It was getting Bay that would fill the contract.
I guess maybe that's why they didn't do it. If you think about it, Rumple's whole motivation has been his son. And if they made Zelina his daughter, that changes. I mean, that's a complete change for his character to have another child mm-hmm. when he's still mourning the loss of his child. So
right.
I understand why they didn't do it, I guess.
It would be a little bit too much. It was kind of the second Star Wars reference. The problem that some people have with Star Wars, everybody is related to everyone, and everybody's, I'm your son, I'm your father, I'm your daughter, I'm your sister, I'm your great uncle. I was like, yeah, I'm actually glad that there is no family connection here. What I liked about that whole scene between Jonathan or we don't even know if his true name is Jonathan, right?
I got the impression it was.
I think so, too. But this whole scene of, you know, his proposal and everything is almost the opposite of what true love is supposed to be. We know that the fairy tales are always about true love. Everything here is false love. There is Jonathan. His name means gift of God. You know, Jonathan in the Bible was the son of King Saul. He was known for his manliness, his generosity, unselfishness. Well, we discovered that there's nothing of those qualities in this Jonathan guy, who's basically a gardener. Then the ring is not a true ring. It's just a piece of straw, so it's completely worthless. And there was the promise of gold, but, you know, it's not really gold. So how true is that commitment? Plus, the moment he proposes to her. He tells her, "Well, and then I'm out of here. Then I'll be back sometime, and then we'll just, you know, make good." And then on the other side, Cora, she's not really loving him. No, she's loving the opportunity that he offers him, and she wants to monetize that as quickly as possible. Kind of sealing the deal by sleeping with him, and then of course she doesn't even want to wait. What is it? 2 weeks or 2 months that he's going on a journey?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. She wants it now, and so there's no true love on that end as well. And when she later on has this meets him and she's mad and you took my family
heart.
Name, my heart, my virtue. I was like, oh yeah, you just gave it away. You weren't even interested in all those things. The only thing you wanted was power. And so, gosh.
Yeah, you took my heart, my virtue, my good name. Mm-hmm. And he says, you practically forced it into my hands when you thought I was a prince. And he calls her a harlot is a harlot.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's this the whole play on the straw gold thing, because yeah, later on, of course, Cora, literally, she will learn how to turn the straw into gold herself. She doesn't need anyone else, you know? She'll learn it herself.
It made me wonder, when in the plot in the timeline does this fit? Because in A Miller's Daughter, mm-hmm. if that's after this, then also Cora meets Eva, mm-hmm. and then the two of them don't seem to know each other. So that kind of puzzles me, because here, if this is earlier, it's Eva who betrays Cora and mm-hmm. tells her the secret. So that makes me confused about where this fits. Hmm. In the timeline.
Well, actually, in my notes from The Miller's Daughter, one of my questions was, why does she trip Cora? Is she tripping Cora out of playful impudence? Was it entertainment for her? You know, here's this young girl, and this is not the kind-hearted mother who schooled Snow about treating her servants with kindness and respect. I wrote, what is more to this story? And they just talk about her as a princess visiting from the Northern Kingdom. But I don't remember, was she already married to Leopold at that point? Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't, maybe they were just betrothed. But this gives motivation for Eva tripping Cora. Mm-hmm. If Eva has already called her out and exposed
yeah,
her,
yeah.
then purposefully tripping her, she recognizes her. She's at a different castle, she's at a different realm or kingdom. Because that was Henry. Henry was the weak prince who was King Xavier. King Xavier, and he's the one that needed the money from Cora spinning the gold. She was accusing him of selling his son. And he said, it's not about love, it's about alliances. Love is weakness. Mm-hmm. He's telling her love is weakness. Having a heart is a liability. So that's where I found the connection very interesting. And then later when Snow admits, you know, this isn't the mother I knew. I wonder what happened to her. You know, what changed her? I thought that was fascinating. You know, she told a secret just like I did.
Well, I thought they did a good job of showing, and they've been doing this all season, of blurring, kind of, I don't want to say blurring the lines of good and evil, but showing that in each person, there's both good
yes.
and evil.
Yes.
And it's
and
your
we
choices.
Saw that with Mary Margaret and her killing Cora. And you saw it again here that her mother, who she only knew as good, had made a choice. That mm-hmm. I mean, you could argue whether or not Eva did the right or the wrong thing there, considering she knew something that, you know, I mean, Cora wasn't innocent here. She was lying mm-hmm. to Leopold. So, you know, Eva, by telling him, maybe she thought she was protecting him since she was betrothed to him. I mean, you know, they've been betrothed since children.
Yeah, there was definitely more to the story. Although I thought using the same actor to play Leopold, he looked a little too old to be playing a young prince that's engaged, you know, about their same age.
Yeah, but otherwise
we don't know he was supposed to be there. I mean, he could have been older, but I thought he looked fine for it. It didn't bother me.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what, if anything, they give us with more detail about the Ava and Leopold, only because we know that and Ava does look still very young,
mm-hmm.
but Snow is so much younger than Regina.
Yes.
As she's young enough that Regina it becomes her stepmother. Regina's already, mm-hmm. we'll say, mm-hmm. 18, 19 years old, and Snow is probably a girl of 10 at mm-hmm. the most when she rescues her from the horse.
Yeah. Well, Leopold was just a very, very old father. And what I thought was interesting is that Snow White only had good memories of Ava. And so when she discovers that her mother might have some you know, not so good qualities, she's a bit disturbed by it. But at the same time, you know, that's also Snow White's story arc. She also has done something terrible. She has killed Cora. And mm-hmm. in this episode, they bring that back, showing that she's still not over it. She's still regretting that. And so she's not Snow White anymore. She's kind of like gray.
Well, and you could also say that she said, my mother told a secret, just like it wasn't her secret. I mean, no one told her to tell the secret versus, you know, Snow did the same thing as a child to Regina. Remember, mm-hmm. Regina told her she was in love with Daniel mm-hmm. and Snow told Cora and Cora killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, similarity there that people only knew Snow was a really good person. And yet she had done something which, you know, you could argue wasn't great either. You know, even I'm talking before killing Cora, but, mm-hmm. you know, back with Regina's secret.
There was one point of contention for me here. So Cora has this relationship with Prince Leopold, mm-hmm. to the point that she seduces him and she says, you know, what's the use of having power if you can't choose whom to wed? She's clearly 2 days away from her wedding. They meet again. They meet again in the stable boy in season one, and King Leopold doesn't give any indication that he recognizes or knows Cora mm. when he proposes to Regina, her
mm-hmm.
daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a little odd. Okay, so he had this relationship with Cora, almost married her, and then he marries Cora's daughter. It's just getting a little too...
I hadn't put that together.
Cora has changed. I mean, that was years later, right? So perhaps he didn't recognize her anymore.
20-something years later.
That is kind of creepy. Yeah.
Well...
Yeah, in his defense, maybe he thinks of Cora in as a peasant, as a poor woman,
mm-hmm.
and then later she sees a much older Cora as a kind of
he doesn't make the
noble
connection.
Woman. So maybe he doesn't make the connection, but still,
if he hears
a name or it's very very hard not to believe that he doesn't recognize her at all.
Oh, it's just probably one of those plot holes that the writers hope that we never notice.
It's kind of like, how come Prince Henry is a prince, but Cora is not Princess Cora with Prince Henry? You know, he did not become king. She did not become queen married to Henry. So there's more to the kings in this realm.
That's the same in Europe. There are all kinds of princes who are not kings. So there are princerics. So then you the king of the head of state of that area mm-hmm. is a prince or a duke or something like that. So if someone is a prince, it doesn't automatically mean he eventually becomes a king.
No, thank God no. We'd have lots of kings.
Being American, we don't really get.
Right, but in The Miller's Daughter, Prince Henry's father is King Xavier.
Yeah,
but they never ever said that Henry became King Henry.
Mm-hmm.
So something else. See, again, there's still something that's not 100%.
Maybe his father
connected.
Maybe the father was still alive, and he was still a prince. You know.
Yeah, but for example, Catherine, the who's married to Prince William, is the Duchess of what is it? Cambridge. She's not Princess Kate, of Catherine.
Hmm.
But that's not here or there.
According to the chat room, Adam Horowitz has said on Twitter that King Leo knew that Regina was Cora's daughter, and that he knew her before as his almost wife.
So they did intend for that to be known.
Apparently.
I'll have to go back and watch that episode.
But that makes it strange. So someone who lied to him was proven to be not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Then you go and marry that person's daughter.
Well, but maybe he liked the daughter.
Remember, the daughter saved his young girl. The whole reason that Cora was able to get Regina in front of him was by saving Snow, saving his child. There's nothing worth the life of a child.
Mm-hmm.
He said it so many times in here, and then to have her give up Zelina, you know, that there's nothing is worth the life of a child. And yet Cora gives up her child. Mm-hmm. So there is something worth the life of that child to her. And if we'll just go there, because I'm on a roll here.
Mm-hmm.
Cora gives birth. She brings that basket. It's tied in a green ribbon. And she says she says it emotionally, but not really crying, that life is cruel. Mm-hmm. It's full of betrayal. And that's my only lesson for you. Mm-hmm. And why did everybody else give their kids away? Snow gave away Emma because it was Emma's best chance. Emma gave Henry away because it was his best chance. Regina let Henry and Emma go because it was their best chance.
Yeah.
Why did Cora give Zelina away? I give you away to give me my best chance.
Exactly.
As long as I have you, I can never be anything more than a Miller's daughter. It's all selfish. It's all false.
And very, very similar, almost a parallel to what happened to Rumple and his father.
Mm-hmm.
Or what is it? Peter Pan. Sorry.
Yes. Rumpel's father is just like Cora. He saw his child as a burden and he abandoned him.
So in a way, it's kind of tragic that these two people that have so much in common, they both have a parent that abandoned them, that were so egotistic, that it damaged them for life, that they are now holding each other, you know, in this deadly grip of slavery. It's just so tragic. Almost like Greek tragedy. And so I in this episode, this made me really hope for Zelina that somehow, because she is, you know, it's almost, again, it's Cora who did this to her, who almost cursed her by saying, you know, that the only lesson in life is cruel. People will betray you. And so she never had a chance to learn what true selflessness is. And then I'm also thinking about Snow White in this episode, where they do emphasize, again, the fact that Snow White killed Cora, right? And so I'm thinking, why is this anger of Zelina not directed towards her mother? Why is she trying to, you know, kill everyone in sight? And she puts the blame exactly where it shouldn't belong. And what would happen if she discovers that Snow White was actually the one who killed Cora, was the cause of all this misery? Wouldn't that somehow count?
Well, they implied several times that Zelina's going to go back in time to kill Ava, because Ava is the one that kept her from marrying Leopold, becoming queen, Zelina would have been the princess, and she would have had everything. But my question is, there's nothing that says if Zelina did go back in time and stop or kill Ava, that guaranteed Cora would have married Leopold. Jonathan would still have been holding it over of Cora. He would still be blackmailing her. You know, once they get a taste of it, they never stop. And there was no guarantee that Leopold wouldn't have found out that Zelina wasn't his child and gotten rid of Cora and Zelina both. There's no guarantee that Rumpel would have ever found Cora, that she would have ever had magic, or that Zelina would have ever had magic. So this is going to backfire in a lot of different ways on Zelina.
I know.
That's too much logic for someone wrapped up in that much greed and envy. I mean, you know.
She's not thinking straight. And
she turned herself green.
But the biggest problem, what absolutely it can't fix, is that Cora doesn't really love Zelina.
Right.
And so you can go back and change your fortune, and then you might have everything. But the only thing that she's truly searching for is love, is being having a family. That's the only thing that she didn't have. And then that's why I'm thinking, I'm just going to launch my theory here. That's why I'm thinking this character is going to have a redemption arc, because that's been the thing with almost everyone in Once Upon a Time. Well, except for Peter Pan, of course. But you can tell that Zelina is not just evil per se for no reason. She's evil because she has been hurt by other people. It's ultimately not her fault. I mean, she's been almost kind of programmed to think this way. So what will happen if someone, you know, instead of her violence and her willingness to act like Cora, basically like her mother, to take instead of receive, if that is met not with hatred and violence, because that's kind of what she tries to evoke in Regina. It's almost as if she wants that fight. She wants someone to fight back. And what will happen if that doesn't happen? And instead, she will be forgiven, she will be adopted, and she will have this family. Because let's be honest, the whole town is like one big happy family with open arms, and the only person who doesn't see it is Zelina. And it has cured Regina. I think it will also cure Zelina in the moment that she discovers that actually Regina and her both were the victims of Cora and both missed that love. And that, you know, I think that's going to be the ending of this episode, of this season. At least that's what I hope. You know, put the apples together in the same basket.
I don't know if it'll be the ending of this season, Father, but I agree with you that they have set this character up to allow redemption.
Yes.
If we can redeem Rumpel, we can redeem Regina. We can absolutely redeem Zelina. Did you notice the way the actress played the role when Rumpel was doing his little seduction scene? When he mm-hmm. goes to kiss her, she melts almost. She just,
oh yeah,
you can tell she's just been craving,
yeah, absolutely,
that kind of love, that kind of touch, and she's so upset. I mean, I think that's what makes her really truly angry, that she realizes he's playing her just to get the dagger.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something in the way the actress portrays the way she portrays that scene. I thought just, oh,
the disappointment was great. It was very believable.
Mm-hmm. So there's an opening.
It's a weakness. It's definitely Achilles' heel.
Yes, and we saw that before when she met Rumpel and he was starting to train her. She was craving that attention, that love. And it really does make me wonder, back in Oz, why she wasn't raised to be a happy child, because the mother clearly, you know, oh, it's a baby. She's going to be the happiest child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The father we get. But what's the backstory still right in there? That may not come out until season 4.
I'll say it's partly Disney, so I'm sure one of the parents died.
Yes, I think.
Well, the mother died.
The mother died,
and
the father didn't love her. So,
mm-hmm. And there wasn't the mother around to give her that nurturing, and so he probably held her at arm's length.
The father was afraid of Zelina and of the power that she had, and so she has only known rejection. That is why I think this craving for love that we saw in that very awkward moment where all of a sudden this clean shaven, you know, Rumpelstiltskin kisses her and is like, let's get this over with.
It was like when he kissed Cora, though. It was creepy when he kissed Cora. It was creepy when he kissed Zelina.
Yeah. So. He's not a very believable kisser.
It makes me wonder, though, how does Zelina know her backstory? Did she ever see everything in a mirror of the Wizard of Oz?
I think so. That must have been just revealed
because
revealed
Cora
to her.
Kind of told her.
Well, the question is, how much backstory does she know?
Yeah,
because we don't know what she really knows.
Hmm. But I think that now that we've seen her craving of true love, and this episode has all been, I think, one of the recurring themes is this, you know, what is true love? And then there was a betrayal in Cora, there's no true love in that whole, you know, proposal scene. The victim is Zelina, who has grown up without true love. And so I'm thinking, you know, the moment that she really meets true love, and I think that will go further than just a kiss, I think she will ultimately understand what true love is through sacrifice, because someone is going to sacrifice him or herself for the baby. I think that's what's going to happen. That's going to break her. That's going to turn her.
I'm thinking, is that why she's so afraid of Emma? Because Emma is a product of true love and has very powerful magic, and she's the mm-hmm. product of very untrue love, and she has also kind of innate ability for magic.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's kind of the opposite kind of magic as Emma's magic.
So where did Zelina get this magic?
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking.
Well, she
about.
Had it. She had it when she was a baby. But remember the scene with the tree?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But why?
So Korra, I guess it's just like
but
the Korra force.
Korra didn't have magic yet.
Well, no, but she definitely had it. She just didn't know how to wield it.
Well, and if magic is emotion, if you control it with emotion, you know, you have to have that dark emotion. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to think that maybe even as a baby, she heard somehow what her mother said, that curse, that life is cruel and full, but that pain of being separated from her mother is what brought out her magic.
Absolutely.
That emotion.
I think the baby, just like what they say about Regina, you know, who is it? Snow, who tells her, you feel not just with your heart, with your whole being. That's kind of like almost what the baby must have felt. It's this utter rejection. And that, I think, is why we see that tornado. I think it's the baby. It's the anger of the baby that creates that tornado.
Yeah. I wondered how she knew there would be a tornado.
No, she didn't know
it.
The way the baby was crying, that was a kind of a very desperate way of crying.
Well, and the tornado is green, so I think that's the baby who creates that. And it totally makes sense because just like her mother, she has this incredibly powerful potential for magic. You just have to add emotion to, in this case, very negative emotion to the mix. And then, boom, you've got a tornado. You've got basically disaster happening. And on the other side, again, beautiful contrast here, you see Emma, who has always been very skeptical about magic, really not embracing her magical abilities, but out of love, out of her desire to protect Henry, to protect Storybrooke, the people that she loves, she now is learning this magic, and man, she's getting good at it.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I felt so bad for Hook and his Hook.
Oh, Hook was miserable in this episode. He was like,
Granny's to go. I should start a franchise. And what was the other one? He said it's bad form for someone to, you know, to interfere with your Hook.
Yes. But it was funny nevertheless. And I know I was impressed that we saw Emma actually really being the sorcerer's apprentice, basically. She's teaching it herself. She's had a little bit of help from Regina, but now she's just learning. She's autodidactic. It's impressive.
I was surprised how far she's come.
Yeah. And you know that this is all preparation for what's going to happen in the next few episodes, because they need to make it convincing that Emma is going to save the day by using magic. And so I guess that we will see more of these little exercises and, you know, training victories in the next episode as well. Did you notice, by the way, that when I think it's in the scene where in the kitchen where Zelina and Rumple are kissing, that there's meat pies on the table?
Yeah. Yes,
that was cool.
I had that on there to bring up.
And I don't know who.
Did you notice all the yellow?
Yeah, that was very warm.
The hallway
warm
lights are
scene.
Gold.
Yeah.
The yellow candle in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yellow line on the wall. When Snow and Regina are cleaning up, there's a light and it makes kind of a yellow line along the whole back, almost like a yellow brick road. Like it's leading them somewhere.
Well, and it's warmth. It is the symbol, the color of love and fire, and what I also liked about that whole scene was that in that kissing scene, the both of them are actually we've both seen them in their kind of disfigured, evil composure with the everything is ugly about them, but in that scene they both looked very clean, very beautiful. She had her golden hair or whatever, and it's like, wow, that is again, it's very true to form that your inner feelings also are projected in the way you look. And in that scene there was sort of like a moment of beauty, and then of course it gets all messed up because there's the dagger and there's betrayal. But yeah.
And did you see the broom hanging on the wall?
No, I missed that.
No.
That's cool.
Yeah. Her broom was hanging on the back wall. I heard
a theory in one of the other podcasts about that the basket that we see, and I think it's a basket in which Zelina is carried when she's abandoned, kind of like looks like elements of a broom. So there's the straw. There's also kind of a handle that looks like a broomstick. And so perhaps she made that broom out of the out of the basket, basically, the elements of the basket. But I don't know, it might be a bit far-fetched.
I thought that the basket with the apples and the basket where she was carried were so similar. So I was wondering if that's the same.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought that actually there would be a child in that basket when I first saw it. I was like, oh, Harry Potter? Wow. But no.
What was I going to say? I started to say something and I forgot.
Baskets, brooms, inner beauty.
I've got so much going on in my head. But, you know, one of the things I also noticed, Zelina kept referring to Rumpel as a doll.
Yes.
When she wants him to dress up in that outfit and he says, I am not your doll. And then she calls him doll multiple times. And, you know, it was really, they had to have chosen that word very carefully because earlier Regina said, she said when she's making her apology to Belle, she says, I've got to defeat the woman who's puppet mastering your boyfriend. And of course, puppet, doll, you know, it's a child's plaything. Mm-hmm. A little girl would have a doll. The doll that Rumpel had as a child.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Neverland,
that's what I was thinking.
Peter
of.
Pan. Mm-hmm. But the fact that a doll is an inanimate object manipulated by an owner, and then puppet. Where did we see the puppets?
Oh,
Jiminy.
Ultimate puppet master. He had Jiminy's parents as puppets in his shop.
Yes. And now he is a puppet. He has lost his freedom and his power.
Yes.
And he's at the mercy of other people, which really makes him look miserable. Even when he's sent out as the Dark One, he's kind of...
He kept apologizing. Please, I really don't want
to
do this.
Yeah, I mean, it was tragic, but also the way he looked, it was kind of like almost as if he had been sleeping outside like a homeless person. And man, you could totally see that it took a toll on him, and he was miserable. And that one scene, by the way, I thought it was just so dramatic. The confrontation between Rumpel and Robin Hood.
Oh, yes. Oh. And when he does the arrow to the boy.
Golly.
And you're like, oh. And then it was just a diversion.
And it was well done because you like, and then the arrow shoots and it stops like 2 centimeters before the head of the child is like, whoa, that is a scary moment.
Even my husband kind of sat up and went, oh,
yeah, ooh. They're not. No.
Now you mentioned that the horrible poltergeisty thing.
But yes.
We have seen something like that. My daughter reminded me that she hasn't been that disturbed since The Wraith.
My
younger daughter hated The Wraith.
I know.
And so this just reminded her of that whole Wraith
thing. But I think it's because I've, you know, watched some of the other, like, poltergeist and the horror movies and The Exorcist and everything. So it totally triggered that kind of fear. Like, oh no, don't open that door. You even see that light, you know, underneath the door, totally that Close Encounters of the Third Kind moment where he's like, don't open the door. And then, wow, you get that whole scene, which is very creepy, very over the top. Plus you have that, you know, that spirit. And I thought it was just very creepy because it's not really the old Korra, it's the younger Korra. So I was like, man, that looks, that makes me think of Star Wars reference number 3. Anakin Skywalker coming back as his younger self and kind of, you know. And then the ghost of Korra going inside Snow. I was like, jeez.
Oh, that reminded me of Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg?
Oh,
the movie Ghost.
Oh, my
God. The ghost
gosh.
Goes inside Whoopi
That's
Goldberg.
Funny.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
It's Patrick Swayze's character.
Uh-huh.
And he goes inside her to control her. But in this case,
really?
She went inside her and gave
bit.
Her the image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the question. So Korra went in her to share? I mean, that was her way to communicate? Because that was – I mean, if she was just trying to communicate, that was pretty creepy.
And why not communicate with Regina? Why communicate with Snow in that? I guess to punish Snow, to show Snow your mother's not all perfect.
Well, yeah, it's getting back. It's Snow who killed her. So I was like, let's scare her a little bit.
I love the quip of Regina after that. And what does she say?
You officially have a less damaging relationship with my mother than I do. And you killed her.
That was good. I like that.
That whole conversation was wonderful.
Yeah, that was amazing.
The Regina Snow.
Mm-hmm. Very well acted as well.
We can never know our past completely. If we had, I probably wouldn't have spent so much time trying to kill you. And she smiles and says, well, we would have found something to fight about. I mean, I was such a brat. It was just lovely. And I love that Regina, she made amends with two different people.
Yes, with Belle and with Snow, both of who she had tortured and persecuted and everything.
But she made such an honest confession with Belle, and I never expected that.
And she didn't confess, and she didn't want to reconcile out of fear because she was coerced, but truly because she has found herself. She now truly is herself. She knows what's important, and that's why she's like, that was in the past. That was, you know, I'm past that now, and I want to ask you for forgiveness. And both times she gets that forgiveness, which was beautiful. And maturity.
She admitted that she did it. Mm-hmm. She didn't try to say, well, that was then. She just said, I did those horrible things, and I'm sorry.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking, you know, if there is going to be another confrontation between Zelina and Regina, is that going to be Regina's ultimate weapon? It's forgiveness. I would love it. Or even self-sacrifice. I don't know.
I'm still hoping for a bucket of water.
No, I don't think they'll go there. I don't think they'll go there.
Well, did you notice that she gave away why it has to be Regina's heart?
Because it was damaged or something?
Right, it's resilient. It's resilient. A resilient heart. Not just courage, not just any heart. It had to be a resilient heart. And that's, I think, why we had the whole conversation with Snow also at the end. That Zelina pulls out the heart and she looks at it. It's all battered and scarred and dark in places. And she says, that's the point. It's resilient.
Hmm.
Beaten but not broken.
Well, that's what she wants, perhaps, because she...
Well, that's the ingredient.
Well, yeah, but it makes sense because Zelina's heart has been battered and broken, and perhaps she needs a stronger heart.
Belle says that she's planning on going back in time. Brains, courage, a resilient heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they figure it out. So
let's talk about that whole time travel idea because this was introduced a while ago. Hold on, did that as you know the big almost like, felt like a setup, like it's going to be the whole Back to the Future thing at the end of the season, and it's going to reset time, and they're going to reboot the whole. Do you really think that's going to happen, Inge?
No, but it's kind of weird because those ingredients are also the ingredients the people of the straw man,
the Wizard
Tin
of
Man
Oz.
And so look for an Oz. So that's kind of launching Oz. So I think one way or the other, she will end up in Oz with all those ingredients, not casting the time travel thing. And then the owners of the heart, the brains, and the courage need to go to Oz to walk the road with Dorothy to get it back. That's season 4, I think.
I was kind of, I think that the purpose of introducing this threat of going back in time and changing history is basically put in place not because the writers want to go there. I don't think we're going to see any time traveling. I think the spell, even if she manages to launch it, it will somehow fail or backfire or have a totally different result than what Zelina thinks it's going to have. But and it's also because she wants a second chance, right? She thinks that by going back in time, that will give her a second chance. I think her big discovery and her redemption is going to be when she discovers that, no, you get a second chance because the people that you hated are going to give you a second chance and will become your family. And so the whole time travel, I think just a story element to put basically all the other characters that we love in jeopardy. And they explicitly make the list in this episode. It's like, oh, you're not going to exist. You're not going to be there. You're not going to be there. Henry's not going to be there. Is it like? So it gives much more weight to the threat, the danger, because it's not just Zelina, you know, and changing her history for her sake. No, this could destroy the main characters. And so, of course, that is the biggest threat. That's why they need to stop her. That is why Zelina is so dangerous now that she has almost got all the ingredients for the curse. But I don't think, I just think that's necessary for us to have that tension, to feel what's at stake. But I don't really think that they plan on going back in time. I don't think we're going to see it.
I'm wanting to go back to Belle. Is any of you surprised that she's all into magic all of a sudden? She was so anti-magic before. And she didn't want Rumple to use magic. And now she's distributing locator spells and looking up stuff in books. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that? Because that intrigues me. Mm. Because she's also wearing that blue a little bit. So what does it mean?
I think it's just basically what Regina says, huh? The little bookworm has grown teeth.
Yeah, I don't see her using the magic so much, but I see her more with the researching. She's helping because she realizes that those with the magic can protect them from those who would do evil with the magic. Yeah.
I mean, she's basically the Hermione in this episode. She's looking everything up, and then she's, oh, it's the so-and-so curse that she's going to, you know. She's informing the others thanks to her, you know, interest for books. And she's able to figure out what the true plan is. So
did you love it when she held up the Lumiere candlestick?
Yeah. Not that one.
I thought of Deborah. I wondered what else Deborah would have seen in the shop that time. But
we'll ask her next time.
Thought I saw a chess set.
No. Oh, interesting.
It might have been from Wonderland, mm-hmm. but I wasn't mm-hmm. sure. So I did notice that they used the clothes again and the colors again to really – I didn't notice Belle so much, but they had – Regina began in that beautiful cobalt blue with mm-hmm. the dress with the zipper up the back. Woo! But then later, yeah, Emma's in that exact same color blue. So they're showing that heroic moment there. Mm-hmm. Snow is in that baby blue dress. And sometimes she has the little pink sweater, you know, representing the baby. But then Regina changes. She's in a taupe blouse. And it's really pretty, but it's very neutral. Mm-hmm. So the whole time that she does this interaction with her mother, she's in that really neutral color. There was the usual, you know, green behind the jukebox. Cora's in her reddish color, rust-colored cloak that could represent blood or death or the evil. And then later, Cora is in that exact same color taupe that Regina's wearing when she confronts Jonathan. And she's the princess, or she's about to be married to Leopold. She's in that beautiful taupe dress. And it's Princess Ava wearing a baby pink, you know, kind of to show you that she is still just a young girl. And she's eavesdropping. And the gray wall that she's eavesdropping outside of has that gold frame. It's exactly like the mayor's house. The mayor's house is very muted tones, white, gold frames around the fireplace where the two white horse prints are up. So I just lots of little things starting to pop out at me as I watch the show. Just little things mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. So, and Ava, as a child, Ava's calling it as she sees it. She has got Cora's number right there on it. You know, you only love yourself. Bam. You know, the Miller's daughter is a worthless liar.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that whoever dressed Mary Margaret in that outfit, really, wow, that was horrible. There's so many beautiful things you can put, you know, in maternity fashion these days. Mm-hmm. That was, oh my gosh.
It's not very elegant.
No, this big cowl neck with this tent, it was horrible. And I just thought, you know, they have such a style with her. And I just, oh no, that was, no. Every time they showed her, I thought, oh, that looks horrible.
Maybe she wants to look more pregnant than she actually was.
No, I think she's pregnant like
no,
that.
No, yeah, I don't know. That was really
but also in her 8th month.
She's
well,
due,
they don't
like,
know how
day,
long,
thought...
but they figure, yeah. Well, you figure she's going to have the baby before the end of the season. So,
Well, she has to. That's all they're waiting for now is for Mary and Margaret to have the baby.
They've already wrapped it up, I think, the shooting. I don't think that there's.
Oh yeah, they're
left.
Done. I've saw some interviews. They're done shooting.
Right.
And she hasn't had the baby yet in real life.
Yeah, so I'm not even sure if we see the birth of the baby. That they might just skip that and then in the next season, you know, the baby will be there.
I don't know. I think that's going to be something important. There's something to do with that, like we talked about with Zelina and the baby. And I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those, you know, like with Emma, you know, she had the baby and then immediately they had to take some action because the curse was coming. And so I have a feeling we're going to see something like that mirrored. They're going to have the baby and then there's an immediate danger. And then they're going to, you know, I agree with what you said, Father, about someone's going to have to self-sacrifice and it might be Regina or someone has to do something dramatic. But I think it's going to be right after the baby comes. I think that's going to be the finale
Someone in the chat.
Yeah, this is going to be a spoiler. Spoiler. Let's not talk about that right now. But I do think, just from a technical point of view, it's kind of how are they going to make that work? Because, well, if you have a baby in the episode and then there are two more episodes and then the actress is still pregnant, you need to get rid of the actress somehow or just put her in a hospital and just kind of cover it up.
That's why I figure it's going to be at the very end, because that way you don't recover that. I mean, you know, okay, there's some people who get out and mow the lawn after having a baby. I was not one of those people, but you know, and you have a belly for a while, so I think they'll do it. We only have two episodes. We have one episode and then we have the finale.
Yeah. No, we have
two more
episodes and then a 2-hour finale.
Okay. Yep. So we're getting there. I mean, I think they'll be able to do it.
All right.
I think it's going to have something to do with this curse. I really do.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, there's got to be this moment where, you know, this curse is the payoff, of course. It has to be part of the finale. Is this curse is pronounced or whatever put into place? And then I think, of course, there needs to be a twist. So the curse is not going to be like that. So.
I think that baby's going to be able, kind of like Emma's the savior, the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Is well, the they missing said, ingredient or?
Right. They haven't said yet why they need the baby, but apparently the baby is the reason the secret that will allow her to do the time travel spells. Mm-hmm. Because when she's talking with Rumpel, she says, he says time travel spells have been written since the dawn of the dark arts, but they've never been cast. It's against the fundamental laws of magic. And she says, well, magic doesn't fail. People fail. And laws only exist until they're broken by someone superior. And he kind of looks at her like, you've deciphered the laws. And
you
she says,
so?
When that baby is born, I'm going to claim back the life. So maybe what, she needs the baby to put herself back in the baby and send the baby back in time?
Yeah, but see.
A life for a life?
You need a very powerful person to do that. So what if that powerful person is not Zelina, but Emma?
I don't know. I keep thinking
make amends or something.
I think the spell is just gonna fail, and that she thinks that she can do it, and then it creates something else, and we're gonna have green smoke this time, and then we will have to wait, you know, months before we know what's gonna be the next reality or the next realm that they will show up.
Where are we going?
Exactly. Well, I think
how did they leave it last year? They left it with them all jumping off to Neverland, and we had to wait all summer to find out what happened in Neverland. So.
And then before that, we had
the
smoke.
We
Well, and then they split it into two arcs. You know, we had Neverland, and then we have Oz. And I saw an interview; they like that, so I wouldn't be surprised if they do that again.
Well, we cannot really predict what's going to happen in the next season, but what we can take a look at is, of course, the promo for the next episode. And before I play the promo, I want to say goodbye to all those of you that wish to remain spoiler-free. You can find our podcast and previous and future episodes on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com. That is also where you will find the links to our sponsors, basically Bluehost, if you want to set up your website, and also the Amazon store. And it's basically if you go through the link and then buy a book or a car or an airplane, then we get a little bonus thanks to that. So it won't cost you extra, but it helps us pay for the bandwidth and everything and the hosting. So thanks for your support. If you want to also support us in another way, you can do that by writing a review on iTunes or give us a positive rating, provided, of course, that you're not the Wicked Witch trying to destroy us. But it's the best way to support podcasters is by leaving a review and telling, you know, other people that might be interested in shows like these. So and we thank you for your ongoing support just by listening, downloading the show. Man, it's awesome. Let's play the promo for episode 19 of the third season, called A Curious Thing.
To have to start killing people.
New next Sunday, no one can stop her fiendish plan.
I don't even know what this witch wants.
She wants your baby.
This child shall do quite nicely.
Not even Glinda, the good witch.
Her magic is not powerful enough.
It may take...
What is that?
...an unthinkable sacrifice.
Your son's life.
Pay attention, sis. This is how you take away a happy ending.
New Once Upon a Time, next Sunday, 8, 7 Central on ABC. And the battle is on. Hashtag Wicked versus Evil.
Hashtag Wicked versus Evil. Too many hashtags. My goodness. Well, anyway, this is... in the episode, we saw just glimpses and a very dramatic scene with Henry. We see Glinda, the good witch.
Doesn't she look a lot like Jennifer Morrison? Freeze frame it?
Yes. Don't know who that is. Is that...
It's Emma.
Oh, no. It's just, she's blonde, but no, I'm actually on a freeze frame here and doesn't look like her at all. But there's a lot of snow in that episode, which is kind of cool. And we see Henry being threatened or being choked by Zelina, so...
Time for Emma to cast her special powers.
Yeah, but it's kind of early, isn't it?
Well, she separated Bay and Rumpel, so that's kind of powerful.
Mm. We also see a Robin Hood pointing his arrow at someone or something. I really like the scenes with the ice castle or whatever it is, and almost as if they've traveled there. I wonder if this is stuff from, let's say, the year that they lost, which they didn't really mention this episode, or whether it is something from before that or after that.
Aurora was in there, and so Aurora would be from the year they lost.
Mm-hmm. I've read that they are. We're going to find out who cast the curse that sent them, back to Storybrooke without memories. Because we still don't really know what happened, and so I heard before the end of the season's over, we're going to find out what happened.
Okay.
What
so
if
we're going to have to
Margaret
go back to Storybrooke? I mean, we're going to have to go back to Fairy Tale Land.
What if Mary Margaret and Regina, one of them, what if they cast it to get them away from Zelina, to buy them time to try and escape? So it instead of it being losing their memories was just part of the curse. They didn't have time to fix it. Or maybe
Glinda the Good Witch. Same kind of thing. Maybe it was done as for the good, like you said.
A way to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So
to have the baby and get away from her.
Okay, so speaking of the baby, here's my spoiler since we're in spoiler area.
Mm-hmm.
There are already pictures online on Entertainment Weekly of that episode. It's episode 20, Kansas, and it will be on May 2nd, which is the last weekend before the two-hour premiere, or the two-hour finale.
Okay.
And it shows them in the hospital having the baby.
Oh.
And she's in yellow. So you can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. It's all yellow.
Smart.
Everything's neutral.
Smart.
That's a big old baby. Yeah.
Oh, and I wanted to tell you one more thing. Because
yes.
I went back and reread notes about the Miller's daughter and the queen is dead to look for the connection between Cora and Ava and put it in the timeline properly.
Mm-hmm.
I did notice that in the Miller's daughter, what's happening in the real world, Storybrooke, is they're coming back from New York and Hook has been Hook has already attacked Rumpel. And on the phone, Mary Margaret tells David to tell Emma that Cora has the dagger. Mary Margaret and David are in Storybrooke. Tell Emma, Cora has the dagger, and there's no telling what that wicked woman will do.
Mm.
Well, Cora and Regina are listening in on the call through the wiretap, and Cora knocks the box over and says, she's not wicked.
Mm.
And in hindsight, that's, I think, pretty funny.
Wow.
How funny. Well, I have one more, and maybe, I don't know if y'all talked about it in the weeks I wasn't there, when Neil died.
Yeah.
According to the internet, he's really gone.
Yeah, he is. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There's no. Confirmed. Yeah, the producers have said no. Mm-hmm. He's really dead.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
For real this time.
And they did it, I think, so that Rumpel could say, the only way I have to honor my son's sacrifice is to kill you, to stop you.
Yeah.
So that's his new goal for Bay. That's what's driving him, is to honor Bay's sacrifice.
Mm.
Oh, and there was one more. We have, I gotta find her name. Princess Abigail is coming back this season.
Oh, really? Oh. Wow.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
So, okay. I don't...
Remind me which one is Princess Abigail.
It's who the princess, David was engaged to before Snow. Or his brother was engaged to, or he was engaged to. He was.
It's the King Midas' daughter.
The Midas, yeah. Midas's daughter. Yeah, there's no other information, just that she's in at least one episode this season. So
I hope they will do a good job kind of like refreshing our memory. That wasn't my only gripe with this episode, was that the whole Leopold thing and Ava, I was like, wait a minute, who, what, when, where?
Yeah, because I did. I stumbled and I said, okay, now I know they've run into each other before. Now, what was it? When was it? Now, where is this going to, you know, how does this fit with what we, you know, saw? And yeah, that did take a...
Those are dangerous moments, I think, in this show, where they presuppose that you have this prior knowledge, whereas, you know, every show has a people, especially this season. It's been kind of, if you look at the ratings and the number of people that watched this is the second half of the season, way more people watched that part than they watched the first part. So if they reference to the series and previous seasons, man, we've been podcasting for 3 years about this show, and I'm getting confused, let alone, you know, people who just occasionally watch an episode or two. That's going to be moments where you just go to another channel, I think. But anyway.
Here's another question for the spoiler of next week's episode. If Zelina is threatening Henry, how are they going to explain that one?
He
doesn't have his memories, right? So to him, he's just... And where was he in this episode?
Oh, you know, well, but
he's
no,
always
but
out
Selena is there.
He's always out with some of his mom's friends. Something's up, but he doesn't know what. And suddenly this crazy woman dressed all in black like a witch is holding a... Was she holding to his head a knife? She was choking him, something like that?
According to someone in the chat room, and this is another spoiler, Zelina threatens Henry if Hook doesn't kiss Emma to get rid of her powers. So, and knowing how much Hook likes Henry and kind of adopts him as the, you know, the son of Bay.
Yeah, we also talked about that before. So people on the internet think that if Hook kisses Emma, or Emma kisses Hook, if that's a difference. And it eventually will backfire because Emma's so powerful that she...
I don't know.
It won't work or something like that.
Or she might just, you know, zap her son away, just like she did with the hot chocolate this time. I don't know.
She could. That would. But then she still got to explain to him, Mom, what's going on?
Oh, who cares? When you're saving someone's life, you know.
Yeah.
It's not
I'll
that it's gonna.
Explain later.
Yeah. Right. First, do
this
act,
is
the and
crazy
then
crazy person that I'm jump bail or you know whatever.
She's the one who killed your father.
We just had the Enterprise hovering above in the sky, and they just beamed you up and placed you somewhere else. I don't know. He'll understand. He knows his science fiction.
Does Zelina know that Balefire is Henry's father?
I don't know. Does it matter?
I don't think she knows the connection yet. Because they had made some comments in the previous episodes about keeping Henry safe. But she does know that Henry is Emma's son.
Yeah, but I wonder, because she is kind of puppeteering the Dark One, who knows that Henry is the only attachment or only connection he still has with Bay. So if she doesn't know about that, that can make maybe a way for him. So if the emotions are strong enough to break free, perhaps. That kind of stuff. But maybe I'm overreaching.
I don't know. It already sounds too complicated for me. And with that, I think it is time that we wrap up this show. Thanks to our co-hosts here, Inge, Lisa, and Shelley, for your time and your insights. Thank you to our listeners for your patience and also your ongoing support. We will be back with another episode next week, a little bit later, because I have to travel to Rome to be at the canonization of John the 23rd and John Paul II. So I'll only be back for, I think, Thursday next week. But there will be a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. See you soon.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.